Perfect. So this online session was conducted on June 11th, 2020. It was hosted by Adrian Chavere, Andrea Dion, and Melissa Purcell with invited elder Flora Northwest. This session will be recorded by the ATA professional development staff for posting to various online collaboration, social media services and platforms, or use by the ATA members and the general public. The recording will be available on these services and platforms until at least June 30th, 2020. Please note that this session's recording may be housed on services outside of Canada and beyond the ATA's control. Your participation in this session is voluntary and indicates your consent for the collection, use, and disclosures of your personal information during the session under the provision of the Personal Information Protection Act. The ATA Privacy Officer is available to answer any questions or concerns at margaret.shane@ata.ab.ca. Sorry for that getting cut off. Awesome. All right. So for many of us, for some or many of us joining today's chat, I'm sure that we've had the opportunity or might be offered the opportunity in the near future to work or learn alongside an elder. And sometimes that opportunity might come with a little bit of nerves or uncertainty as we maybe aren't sure about protocol or how to engage in such a partnership. And so we hope today to bring some light to this. It's also likely that we've been talking about how unprecedented these past 3 to 4 months have been. And I find that this has been a time for reflection as well as resilience. And as much as we are learning through this experience, there is value and strength in listening to others who have life experience to share from their own stories of resilience. Now, granted, this pandemic is unique, but certainly there are parallels to similar struggles and challenges from the past that offer teachings to guide us through the present and into the future. And so we are extremely grateful for the strength, wisdom and willingness of Elder Flora Northwest to join us this afternoon so that we may listen and learn. Flora, welcome, and I invite you now to please tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Flora Northwest. I was born and raised in Musquatchees. I was born many years ago in a tent in a cold winter in January. And because we didn't have any hospitals out here. I did my education at the at Erminskin Residential School from the age of 6 to 15. And then from there, when I look at the history of education back then, we were taught to work. I guess you can say that we went through child slavery, but we went through a lot of abuse as well, physical, mental. For me, it was sexual abuse. So I had to, when I left the school, everybody left school at 16 with a minimum level of education. And if you look back in history, our people were not allowed to go to high school or even to go to university because if somebody wanted to go to university, they had to enfranchise and get on with their university because this was one of the policies from the Indian Act, from Indian Affairs, from Ottawa. So from there, I went out and worked because I was taught to work as a housekeeper, and I ended up being back then it was a babysitting, so I ended up working as, a nanny at the time. So, but I was able to go out and work. And then as I went on in my journey, I eventually ended up in a relationship and had some kids, and wasn't a very good relationship. And there was alcohol involved. And I left that relationship in 1975. So I had 4 kids with me when I left the relationship because it was abusive. But I always worked from the time I left school, so I had different experiences in my life working with the kids with the handicap. I worked at a hospital. And then eventually when I came into recovery with alcoholism, went to work for the treatment for the detox center. And in 1975, I got a job with the federal government with the what's called a community health representative. And I stayed with the federal government for 7 years. So I had various jobs. I was a court worker, family and criminal court worker. And from there, in 1986, I went into education with homeschool liaison. And then in 1987, I took my Cree language. I went back and studied my Cree language and became a Cree language and teacher. And that was in 1988. In 1989, we started off our own schools, and that's where I went with Samson First Nations. So I've been with education since then, and 1991 to 93, I went back to school and took my social work. And I've been with the school since 1986, I guess. Not, no, 1988, 89. I did 1 year of teaching, and then from there, I've been in school since then. And, you know, I got my diploma in social work. And then about, I forget what year it was, I was given an honorary master's degree. I got it in my closet. I gotta get it out.
It was quite an honor.
And while Flora is doing that, she had asked a little bit earlier to know who we have joining us today. So those of you that are comfortable, I invite you to just type into the chat box. Maybe you can let us know where you're joining us from, and if you are in education, what your role in education is. And if you're not in education, please tell us what your role is. Sorry, Flora, take it away.
Yeah. So in 19, when was this? Anyways, I got this honorary master's of arts degree through the Muscogee's Cultural College. And I was quite surprised to get this. So it was an honor. So through my experience, through my life experiences, I went back to my culture back in 1974 and went back to trying to find out who I am and who I was and who I am today. And then I've always maintained my language, but I had to learn the culture. So I had some teachers in my life that taught me. One of them was my mother. And it's so important to be able to share this with you, because I'm still learning. Every day is a learning process for me. Excuse me. And when we indigenous people, I had to learn the protocol. As I journeyed into my culture, into my ceremonies, I had to relearn my identity. And I had to go out and do protocol for me to try and understand what to do when I need, you know, when I need advice, or if I want to get teachings. I had to go out there and do a protocol. So when you do a protocol, it's so important that in Treaty 6, we use tobacco. And the reason for that is because it is so important, whatever a person is seeking for, that they do that protocol with a gift. And they So this way, when they get that information from an elder, the knowledge is passed down to you, because that's what you want. You want to remember what that elder gave you. And I want, you know, this is where, because you did protocol with me, a few days ago. And it's an honor to be able to provide you, to teach you what the protocol is. The other thing is, when a protocol is done, you don't forget what was passed down to you. Because if the protocol is not done, you may forget. You may forget what was passed down to you. So I remember when my grandson was only 3.5 years old, I took him to a ceremony to get a name for him, a Cree name. So we were in this lodge, and he got his name in our language. We sat in a lodge, and I told him, okay, I want you to repeat this name 4 times. So he repeated his name 4 times. We came home. I remembered his name. Then about 2 months after, I forgot his name. And I was yelling at him, get over here. And he came over and said, what is it, Kokum? What's your Cree name again? And he said, what? I forgot your Cree name. What is it? And he told me, Kumikonit. And I said, oh my God, you remembered. You remembered. I said, oh my God. Because I taught him, I made him say it 4 times, he was able to remember. And he still remembers today. So this is why it's so important, when the protocol is done, that whoever is doing the protocol and whatever you're given with knowledge, you remember. And there's 2 types of protocol. One is for the male and one for the female. Because a female has their own, they have their own ceremonies. So they do their own, they do protocol with female. And the male, they have their own protocol as well. So men, you know, the boys can do a protocol with the elder. Because in a woman, you know, women have their ceremonies. And the ceremony that's for the, it's called the rite of passage. So that's a woman's ceremony, and that ceremony is for young girls. And the boys have their own with the elder, with the male elder. And everything that we've learned, we've always been taught to go and see an elder with tobacco and to get that information from that elder. So, you know, and then it's, you know, you also give them a gift with the protocol. And years ago, protocol was really, really powerful. If a person was sick and they went to an elder, and this would be for medicinal reasons, sometimes they would go as far as giving that elder a horse for help, or something that was their pride and joy. That's what they would give for their, with the protocol, because they want their child or they want their loved one to get better. And it happened, you know. I've seen some of the, I had an experience with that, where a person went to seek for help, and for cancer, and they got better. So we, and then the men, they do their ceremonies too. So when our grandson, the one we adopted, my husband and I, he decided to teach him how to hunt. So, and then, so what he did was he went out with him, and he did a protocol with his grandson and told him, we're going to go out today. We're going to go out and I'm going to teach you, number one, the safety of a gun. Number two, how to hunt. And number three, how you're going to learn to survive as you get older. So they did. And when they came back with a duck. And for every young man, young boy that got his first killing, they would have a feast and honor that young man, that young boy, with a, you know, honor him with a feast. And then other elders would come in and pray for him. And that's what we did. He was really honored to go through that rite of passage on how to do hunting. And that's the way it was many years ago. You know, the boys were taught how to hunt in a proper way. And the girls, they had their teachings with the elders, and the rite of passage is still very strong in our community for young girls. And they have a 4-day ceremony with the young girls. And my sister has done that ceremony for a number of years. And for the amount of girls that she's been with, every one of these girls have been successful. They've been able to stay in school and graduate and go on to, you know, college or university. And they've been taught self-respect, self-care. Even the boys, they're taught the same thing by their men, by their elders. So when you do this protocol, keep in mind that it's powerful, because this is only the beginning, the introduction of what how to do it. And because if you want to go further with the protocol in your schools, I was writing down a few things, is to be mindful, to be able to spend some time with the elder, to be able to, you know, for the elder to be a part of the school, and to be able to develop trust, you know, faith and trust to all staff and students. And to, you know, if teachers are going through maybe difficulties with a student, you know, sometimes it's nice to have an elder at the school, because the elder may be able to work with that student. And to, you know, a lot of our kids, well, a lot of our students, they've been introduced to the cult, to the ceremonies. And if you're in a school, you know, I don't know how many of you are aware of the smudge. And if there is one, if it's in a separate room or if it's in the open area, you know, to allow the students to smudge as they come in to the school. And to you know, to develop that faith and trust with the students, and to be able to work with a student. Because we all know when we work in a school, students come with different dynamics. Students come with all sorts of problems. You know, some maybe come into school with domestic violence. And if you're working with a student, you know, sometimes they don't even want to go to a foster home. They'd rather stay in their school with their teachers and to work with the parents. It is, you know, it's different today with our students. The other thing is to, I've always said in the years that I've been working within the schools, the students have taught me a lot. They've taught me to listen. They've taught me to see. They've taught me to feel. Because, you know, students are very, some of them are very vulnerable. And some of them, they come to school with a lot of anger. And how do we deal with those students? And all they want is sometimes to be alone, to have that safe environment. Because some of our students, they come to school with, maybe there's no food at home. So they, you know, they get their breakfast and their lunch at the school. Before the schools were closed, we were talking to the students and we told them about the situation. And they said, why? We don't want to go. We don't want to leave. And, you know, right away they were scared. Well, we didn't know where COVID-19 was going to take us, you know, when it all started. Because everybody was, wasn't too sure where we were going to go with this COVID-19. So we've tried to give them phone numbers to keep in touch with us, you know, to. And then we've had a lot of losses in our community, and some of our students have been affected by their, you know, with their grief. And because I'm out there, I've been going out to support these students with their losses. And as I speak right now, there's a family that, you know, the kids lost their dad yesterday. So I'll probably see them and maybe by tomorrow and go spend some time with them. Because, you know, they're a part of our school. Because I remember going to residential school. We didn't have that. We didn't have those teachers. We didn't have that compassion. And it was so hard to learn. So hard to learn when you have all these issues. Because you're afraid to speak. You're afraid to say something because of the supervisors, the nuns that were there. The other thing, we had learned to suppress our fears. We had learned to suppress our tears because the kids that were getting straps used to tell us, if you get a strap, don't cry. Because if you do cry, you're going to get more straps. So a lot of us that went through the residential school, we didn't know how to cry for many years. So, you know, we were scared to say something. So today, you know, with our students, they're the greatest teachers in our classrooms. You know, we don't realize what they can teach us. You know, all we have to do is take that time to listen. And you as teachers, you know, you can be there and be a part of their lives. Yes, 2 days ago when I was up in Edmonton, we were outside, and this young girl, there was a van there, but there was another car that pulled up. Then all of a sudden they called my name. I didn't know them. And this girl came out and she said, "Flora, Miss Northwest, you were my Cree teacher." And she introduced herself. "You were the best teacher." I don't know. I didn't know what to say. And said, "I got married. I want you to meet my husband." And she introduced me to her husband. And her husband said to me, "Well, you did a good job. She's a good woman." I said, "Thank you." So, said, "The other thing, could you do me a favor?" He told me. I said, "What is it?" "We're really trying hard to have a baby." I don't know. I can help you with that. I said, "I don't know if I can do that." I told her. I told him. He just laughed. And she works at a school in Kihewin. And her husband said, "You did a good job. She's a good woman." He told me. I said, "I'm glad I had an impact in her life," I said. But I guess those are the rewards we get when we work with our students. You know, we get those rewards in you know, as time goes on. And never be afraid to take that risk when you're working with Indigenous students. You know, never be afraid to, you know, to ask them to, if they know their culture, if they know any stories, you know, because as a Cree language instructor, we shared a lot. You know, I don't teach anymore, but, you know, protocol is so important as we go through this, when we're working in education with our students, because we have to work with parents, and we also have to work with other elders. I have a sign in my office that says, "I was taught to respect my elders, but they're getting harder and harder to find." And one of my elders saw it and she said, "I hate your poster." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "I don't like it." And she, after a while, she said, "I went to residential school. I didn't even know nothing about my culture," she said. "That's why I hate it." I said, "Okay, I didn't mean to." I said, "I didn't mean to, for you to be offended with my poster." I said, "Because I grew up with my elders at home when I was a little girl. And it was the elders that taught me a lot at home with the language. And my grandfather spent a lot of time with us, talking to us, telling, you know, storytelling. And storytelling is so, so important. You know, if you have an elder to come in, especially when students are acting up, you know, it's always best to, that's what I used to do when I used to teach Cree. If I knew that, you know, if the kids had some short attention span, I used to tell them to put their books away. And I'd talk to them and tell them a story, a story that would have that they'd be able to identify and to be able to apply that story to themselves. And one young man, he had about three kids at the time. He was my student. one day he came up to me and he said, Miss Flora, thank you for your teachings. As a parent now, he said, I understand now where you're coming from. He said, I'm using the one, what you taught me is what I'm teaching my children. And he's, you know, he's very traditional. So he got his children involved in powwows and ceremonies. And I was really proud of him. And all he said was, it's how you taught me. And so how you teach a child will have an impact, how you teach them. I didn't have very good teachers in my life at the residential school because they were, you know, I was abused. So I only had one teacher and she was a nun. And that was probably the only one that I ever looked up to. Others I didn't. So the other thing too is always try and have a positive attitude, because, you know, I was never one that would understand how your spirit within will react to the teacher. I've been studying trauma. Tell him I'm busy. So because of trauma, it was really hard for me to learn. And today, you know, I look at my childhood. I look at the trauma that I went through in my at the school and how it had an impact on my life. And these are some of the things that your students may have. And you need to be able to listen to them. You know, because if my grandmother used to tell me, be kind to yourself. I didn't understand that until later on. Now I understand. So this is what I try and teach the students. If they've come with, you know, if they had experienced trauma in their lives, it's hard for them to understand kindness. They have a hard time understanding, you know, the core values of respect, love, honesty, thankfulness. Some of them have a hard time with that because of their environment. But once they understand who they are, you'll give them that opportunity to, for them to be able to get their education. Because I didn't have that opportunity. Because I left the school probably at a level of grade 7, maybe barely grade 7, because I didn't have the right teachers at the time. So today, you know, I try and work with the students with trust. And so one of the things that I wanted to say was when we go in the mornings, if we're not, if we're going to go to the classroom miserable. Teacher, the students will feel your spirit. And I think for me, I've broken every ATA rules, every one of them. I was told, don't give the students a hug. I broke that, which is fine. I will always ask a student when they come into my office after we talk, I will always, always ask a student, male or female, and say, do you need a hug? And if they say yes, and then they never say no to me. So I will give them a hug. So I don't know how the rest of the, you know, the rest of the students are doing out there. And I know when just before COVID started, there was a 15-year-old that committed suicide at one of the schools. And that was tough. So these are some of the cases that we have, you know, we see in our schools. And I hope we don't see them. Because if we can take care of that child, if we can take care of that spirit, they don't have to do that. You know, we have to make sure that these students are going to be, they're going to be okay. They're going to be safe. I'm sure some of your teachers out there, you're wondering how your students are doing. You know, how are they surviving? Because a lot of these students, the school is their haven. You know, that's where they're safe. That's where they get their two meals a day. And it's not just our Indigenous students, it's also the other students. You know, it's we have a big responsibility. I think we need to continue building that safe haven for our students, regardless who they are. You know, a lot of our students, you know, they seem to give up as soon as something's wrong. They have that very low self-esteem. They want to give up. They don't want to go on. But we have to work with them. They have to believe that they can be successful. And all of us have that. We all have that skill to be able to develop that child into whoever he or she wants to be. You know, all we have to do is work. I know my little great-grandson. He's 7 now, I think. At one time, he wanted to be a KFC worker. And one day, he wanted to be a pilot. So right now, he doesn't know where he wants to be. But he's thinking about his goals, his future goals. And it's so important. You know, when my mom was with us, she always had this philosophy where, what are you going to be when you grow up? She would always ask them. And they'd come up with, oh, I want to be this, I want to be that. You know, and I think that's missing in families. You know, we don't do enough to provide that seed in a child's future. You know, we don't, we forget that they need to be guided. You know, I guess that's part of our school, as educators, you know, we're the second parents, and we have to help them, guide them as to where they want to go, who they want to be, and, you know, to help them go through, to meet their challenges to meet their goals. Because we never got that when we were in school. You know, for me, as a student at a residential school, you know, they call me a savage, they call me a pagan. And I got to believe that. I didn't understand. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, I was being abused. It wasn't until later in my life I did the study on the residential school, and I was really, really angry of what happened, what the federal government did to our people. And, you know, it's a shame, you know, it's not a shame for me, but it's, you know, the government should be ashamed of what they did to our people. You know, they stole our land. You know, they tried to kill the Indian and a child. They didn't want us to speak our language, or we got strapped. And we couldn't even talk. I was 6 years old, I was fluent Cree. How did I survive that system in my first year at the school? You know, how did I ask to go to the bathroom? You know, because I was already told that first day, don't speak your language or else you'll get a strap. You know, you're only 6 years old, and this is what you were faced with at the residential school. So, you know, it was when I did the study with the residential school, I was really, really angry of what they did to me. But I said to myself that they're only going to do that to me once, because they're not going to do that to my kids. But one of my sons went through that at the day school. One of the teachers hit him. So, you know, that's another experience that I had to go through with my child at the old residential school. It was in a day, he was in day school. So, you know, all you teachers out there, you have the best opportunity to learn from your students. They're the greatest teachers. And I've said that time and time again. Every child is a teacher. Every child can teach you something. If, you know, every parent can be your support, because we need parents in our schools, and they're hard to come by. But all you need is build that trusting relationship with parents, with your elders. I would love to go into your schools. I would love to go and spend some time in your schools, because, you know, that's a part of, you know, that's been a part of my life for so many years, is to be in a school and to talk to the students and 2 years ago, I went on a field trip with the students. I work at the Outreach School. And it was in January. We were up in Jasper. And I'm one that will always challenge the students. And I did that day. And it was on my birthday. They were going to go cross-country skiing. And I've never cross-country. I said, okay, today I'm going to do it. It's my birthday. I'm going to do it. I had to do it because I wanted to prove it. I wanted to show the students I can do it too. So I did. And I loved it until I got too over. I was just too confident. I was way behind and I was trying to catch up with them. I said, there's a way I can go fast on these skis. Yeah, I did it. And I went, my skis went too far out and my poles were really behind and I fell. I was just screaming for the instructor and he came over. Could you please help me up? I think I broke my neck because I heard a snap on my neck. You got to help me. So he comes, you want your skis off? Yes, please. So he did. And then I got up and I said, oh, I guess I didn't break my neck. I said, I think I needed a chiropractor. I said, these are some of the, I challenge myself as to how far I can go and what I can do. And I think that's, go see your mommy, go on. Yeah, go on. Go see mom. So I think that's our, I think those are some of the things that we can do. And I've tried everything at the school, rollerblading, with the, you know, always trying to challenge, trying to do things.
We've got a little one in the house with us.
There's two of them, a boy and a girl. Any questions?
Yes, absolutely. Flora, I want to first answer your question from before, and maybe that will give folks some time. If there is anything that you would like to ask Flora, please, again, you can use the blue raised hand, or you can throw your question into the chat, and one of myself, Andrea, or Melissa will see it, and we are happy to share it with Flora, as we've got about 10 more minutes left on this afternoon's call. But Flora, just to let you know, we have teachers joining us from all across the province, between kindergarten to university professors. We even have some teachers from Peru joining us. So we've got an international flavor going on. That's how much we wanted to hear from you today.
Oh my God.
We have educational assistants with us. We have psychologists and social workers. We have Indigenous leads at school divisions. We have recreation consultants, dietitians, museum programmers, and I'm going to give an even little, principals. And we even have a little shout out from Carrie W., who remembers you from her time teaching at, and I hope I pronounced the school's name correctly, Nipiscopac.
Nice try, Adrian.
Thank
you.
Really?
Yes. So Carrie's happy to be seeing you today and reconnect.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not seeing any questions in the chat box. I think people are just really appreciative for the opportunity to hear you speak and to share your knowledge. And so maybe I could say in these, in the last 5 minutes, I respect that it might not be enough time, but I recently read an article, Flora, where a Métis teacher in Ontario was talking about her resilience through this pandemic and how it was really an opportunity for her to revisit and speak with her grandmother and to speak to elders in her community to learn how to be present and maybe to stay positive or just to be resilient during this time of COVID. And I'm wondering if you share that sentiment or if there's anything that maybe in closing you would like to share with our audience about what it's like to go through something like what we're going through currently.
One of the things that I wanted to share this pandemic has it's all new for us. It's new for me, where I think if we could look at the pandemic as, because as Indigenous peoples, we've gone through pandemics. Our ancestors went through that. And they have, you know, some didn't make it, some made it. And I think, you know, with the, I guess in my belief system, because I was born Catholic and I left the church and I came back to my culture. We have a lot of ceremonies in our community. Our elders pray morning, evening, because I saw that when I was growing up. For me, faith has always been strong, even though I didn't go to church, because I left the Catholic church when I left the residential school. But I think for me and for everybody, we need to develop that positive. Because my grandmother told me when I was a young girl, there's going to be sicknesses ahead of you. He said, you better be ready how you're going to take care of those. If you're going to be afraid of them, you're going to be the first one to get that sickness. And I thought, oh my God, I don't want that. And I asked her how. Keep yourself healthy. Keep your mind busy. Have a strong mental health. And always try and think positive. Be active, be healthy. And never, don't get lazy. Because if you get lazy, your body's not gonna, it's not, if your body's not active, your immune system will go down. So I've always been active. And I've overcome the fear, because as soon as it came in, I did some evaluation for myself. And then I remembered what my grandmother told me. Don't be afraid. I'm not afraid, but I make sure I know my distancing. I wash my hands. I don't allow only my family come to my house, my kids. But I don't allow strangers in my home. And, you know, I think as teachers, we always have to be healthy. We always have to have that strong mental health. And we always have to be strong, to have the right, you know, the proper rest, to eat, you know, to have our regular diet and drink lots of water. And the other thing I've said was, they keep talking about the second wave. We've gone through the first wave. I think when the second wave comes in, we're going to be that much more stronger. We're going to be that much more stronger and be ready. And the thing is, you know, we've been told time and time again to have our food supplies, even before the pandemic. We've always been told to have enough food supplies. And I've always done that. So, you know, enough, but not to go to an extreme. What happened the first phase with all that toilet paper and paper towel and, you know, that's not the point. You know, we have to, yeah, we need the toilet paper, but let's not overstock. So another thing, if when we do go back to school, we don't know when. But whatever is in front of us, let's be ready for it. Let's take that time to take care of ourselves before we can take care of other people, others, you know, the students. We know that, you know, we have to, one of the things that was brought to my attention was one of the frontline workers said, where do I go to debrief? And there's a lot of people that have that problem. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to go to debrief. Teachers need to debrief in a safe environment. It is not a sign of weakness. So, you know, we need to do that. In our school, when we have our staff meetings, we all have an opportunity to say something. And the other thing is to trust all, you know, with our coworkers. I know in some schools there's some staff that don't get along. And we have to, you know, we have to stop that. We got to develop that in healthy environment. The other thing is to, if we're going to have our students back, you know, I hope they'll provide enough masks and sanitation needs for all the students. And I've been going to Tim Hortons, they're giving out masks. A&W's giving out masks. I think McDonald's, I think, is giving out masks. So I've been going to these outlets just for a hamburger or or just a cup of tea to get some masks. Not, you know, because I have family. You know, I have grandkids, and they don't go out. So I thought, well, why not? So like I said, we've gone through this first phase. We survived. The second phase, we're going to be ready. And we have to, you know, we have to make sure that we have to be strong. I guess for one of the, boy, these kids. She's trying to look after her brother, pulling her back into the kitchen. The other thing too is, I don't know if any of you know or notice, when we go into the school with issues, our own personal issues, the students will sense the spirit. You know, they will sense the spirit within. So we have to, you know, we always have to take care of our own personal needs. And stay healthy, be active, keep yourself busy, learn to relax, to overcome fear. I guess the most important thing is meditation is powerful. We have a higher power to share our troubles with. You know, we can do our meditation, and that works. And every day, I try every day to be you know, to meditate.
She can sit there with her.
The I guess one of the things that
we had a question.
What?
From our dietitian friend from the north. She was mentioning that she's tried the dried moose meat, so the dry meat. She wanted to know what your favorite indigenous food would be.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
I like dry meat.
Dry meat.
I like dry meat with thymme.
With thymme?
Thymme.
Yes.
And a little bit of salt.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And you can boil it.
Yeah.
And then make a
pemmican
out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So.
In a while.
Yeah.
He's very happy to join. Yeah, so we have some thanks that I wanted to share with you. And I'll just read them out.
Okay.
Yeah, so hold on, sweetie. Okay? Okay. Alrighty here. So from our friend, we just want to say thank you for your beautiful teachings from Janet. And then very inspirational. And your students must feel so special. And so some of our stories, thank you, Flora. Your stories made me laugh and cry, a perfect way to end the workday. So thank you for sharing your wisdom and spirit. They are honored. What an honor to share this time with you. We appreciate your wisdom with gratitude. And there was a question about the perspective on student wellness when we return back to school. And what is the number one thing you think students will need in September?
I think one of the things that they need to know and hear is the about the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to stay? How long is it going to stay?
Yeah.
We don't know when. Because this is our first experience.
Yeah, in our lifetime.
In our lifetime. So we don't know how long it's going to be. And I guess we'll just have to tell them that, you know, go day by day, week at a time, and just listen to the news and
stay informed.
Yeah. And and continue practicing distancing, washing your hands, and not visiting.
Yeah.
No sleepovers. So
great. So there's a lot of thanks and lots of powerful lessons that resonated with our guest today. And I just wanted to share a comment between my friend Matt and I. He said, this is reconciliation, and the comment about learning how not to cry, like it just got to me, and I know it's, I'm so humbled by your sharing today, and thank you so much. Adrian, is there anything else that we wanted to add, or any parting words that we wanted to share?
I'll just check in and see if our friend Melissa Purcell had anything that she wanted to say in closing, and then, yeah, I can wrap things up.
Sure. Yes, really just wanted to express my gratitude to you, Flora. You've shared a lot of really amazing teachings within this last hour that I know that I will continue to carry with me moving forward. So I really just wanted to thank you so much for being generous with all of us here over this past hour. So thank you. Masicho.
Hi.
Yes. So to echo what we've been hearing all across Flora, thank you. For me, the big takeaway is empathy and understanding, and to make sure that we're taking the time with whomever we are with, adult or child, to really not rush to judgment and to really make sure that we're taking that time to understand who that person is that we are sharing that space with, and to value what their story is and to listen to what their story is. So thank you for your courage, and thank you for your bravery joining us here this afternoon. We are all better for it.
I think one of the things that this book, The Reconciliation Manifesto, there was a lot that was in this book. And I've been going through doing a decolonization and self-determination and trying to be economic independent for myself. My husband passed away 5 years in July, but I was always independent. And I've taught my kids to try and be independent. And because of my belief in education, nobody ever graduated in our family. So I worked on my kids and I said, come on, you kids, you're going to be the first ones to graduate. You're going to graduate. So they did. And I'm a proud mother, a proud grandmother, because my oldest granddaughter went to Graham McEwen University. My second granddaughter gave me two great grandsons, and she took some programs in Mount Royal College in Calgary. And then I have a granddaughter that's taken environmental science at U of A. I have the youngest grandson. He's taken a chemical engineering at U of A. My son had only about a half a semester left for commerce at U of A. My daughter-in-law has her PhD. So, I'm always proud, I'm always honored and proud of what and my kids are good parents, really good parents. So education has always been my passion for the kids. My grandkids, my kids, my grandchildren, and then my future, the great grandsons. Because it's the only way they're going to survive. They have to survive. And it's been I like my journey because I became an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic of 46 years. So the 46 years of my life has been a different journey in my life. And it's been a great life. A lot of challenges, a lot of experience that I've learned. And just being a part of a child's life is so important. And I'm sure all of you might have heard about Muscogees. It used to be called Hobima. At the beginning, we had a lot of gangs. And I worked with those students. They taught me lots. They taught me a lot. And today, they have their families. They don't live here. But when I do see them, they come and give me a hug. And they come and thank me. So I had a lot of teachers in my life in the past too, the students that I worked with. And I hope that you will all have that experience with your students, that you will remember some of those teachings that they're going to pass on to you. And every child is important. Every child is special. Because when we were at the residential school, we weren't special, we were savages. So I'm not the savage that they talked about back in the day. I had to It took me many years to understand what colonization was, assimilation. Today, I still come across people that are still the colonizers. But I'll speak, I do speak out because, I've gone through that and I just want people to know that it's taken many, many, many years for me to overcome colonization. So I really, really appreciate all of you. I wish I could meet all of you, but maybe in time we will meet. And hopefully when we go back to school, we will learn something from COVID-19. I always say that, and I've been saying this, COVID-19 taught us something. It's a lesson that we can take. The strengths that we got from COVID-19 for us to be strong, to stay positive, to overcome that fear. And I think if we can overcome that fear, we don't have to be afraid. But making sure that the babies need to be safe. We got to keep those babies safe. If you have little ones at home, keep them at home. Because there's a virus. I think there's a virus that are hitting the babies. I think we had one case in Canada. So we got to keep the babies safe. And I thank all of you. It's been a great afternoon, to be able to spend some time with all of you. And I want to thank you, Adrian and Andrea. You're the one. I want to thank you. I don't know how you found me.
That's all, Andrea. And for Andrea, I am grateful. And I know that you've got two very young, precious kiddos there who are just probably waiting for you to come off this call so that they can have you to themselves. So we've been really gracious. We are grateful for your gracious time, but please do enjoy that time with your family now, Flora. Thank you to everyone who joined us this afternoon.
This is my second family. These are my afterthoughts. Oh, I got to share something with you guys before we hung up.
Okay.
I was a foster parent for about 45. I'm still a foster parent. Been a foster parent for 46 years from the time I sobered up. I took all my kids to a doctor before school started in August. I had my daughter Kim with my last name. I had this other girl with a different last name. This other girl with a different last name and a son that was with a different last name. So there was five of us. So anyways, the receptionist finally came up to me and she said, "Miss Northwest, can I ask you something?" I said, "What is it?" "Geez, that was the biggest mistake that I ever made." He said, "You have a very unique family. They all have different names." I should have told her that's how many times I got married. But I didn't tell her that. So I told her where my kids came from. So anyways, it's been great. I hope I was able to help you and guide you. I don't want to mislead anybody.
Not at all. Thank you so much for the laughter this afternoon. I know we are all very appreciative for that as well. It's a beautiful humor you have to share with us.
Hi, hi. Thank you. Hi, hi. Right. Thank you in Cree. Yeah.